Today's shiur is Masechta Baba Metzia, Daf Zayin, and we will begin Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, the end of the third line. The Gemara in the previous shiur had quoted the statement from the Mishnah Masechta Bechayrus that says, "A sveikus nichnasim l'dir l'saser." Animals whose status is questionable are part of the process we go through to take Maisa Behema. And the Gemara starts, Amalei Rav Acha Mediftel Ravina. Maisveikus. What does the Mishnah mean when it speaks about animals whose status is questionable? Ilema Safek Bechayrus, that the Mishnah means that the animal that there's a question, is it a Bechar or not, is an animal that we include in the procedure of taking Maisa Behema. Ask the Gemara, the Pasuk, when it speaks about Maisa Behema, says, Yia Kodesh Amrachmana, an animal that will become Kodesh, and an animal that will become holy, because we're going through the Maisa process. V'loi Shekvar Kodesh, not an animal that's already Kodesh. And if this animal has on it already a Sofik Bechayra, that means it already may have Kedusha. If it already may have Kedusha, it's not part of the Maisa process, says the Gemara. Ella, Safa Pidyon Petach Amor. What the Mishnah means is regarding a situation that we've been discussing, where we have an animal, a firstborn donkey, and we're not quite sure, is this a firstborn donkey or not? That we know the halacha is that the donkey, which is a firstborn, has to go through the procedure of Pidyon Petach Amor, redeeming it on a seh, on a sheep, on a lamb, and what the Mishnah is teaching us is what Rav Nachman said. Dabar Rav Nachman Amar Rabbi Vavua, Yisrael Sheish Le'asor Safek Pitri Chama B'teich Be'isai. There were 10 such donkeys in one's home. 10 donkeys that there is a question, are they a Petach Amor, the firstborn donkey or not? And then, therefore, he took 10 different lambs to redeem these donkeys on. Mafrishalay Masar say it. He has to take 10 different lambs to go through this procedure. Umasrat. And now that he has these 10 lambs, we have a question regarding these 10 lambs. Are they Pidyon Petach Amor lambs that belong to the Kohen and therefore don't go through the Maisa procedure? Or are they not belonging to the Kohen and therefore have to go through the Maisa procedure? Teaches us the Braisa that the halacha is Masron Vehein Shaloi. We have to go through the Maisa procedure, but the Yisrael keeps it, because since the Kohen can't conclusively prove that this was a Petach Amor, and that this was the seh that was used to redeem the Petach Amor, which belongs to the Kohen, therefore the halacha is that the Yisrael goes through the Maisa procedure, but he doesn't have to go give it over to the Kohen. It's interesting to note that Tshuvas HaRashba makes this observation. The Rambam, when he speaks about what we just discussed, Sofik Pidyon Petach Amor, he says that the halacha is that even if Tokfei Kohen, if a Kohen were to seize the Sofik Pidyon Petach Amor, he has to return it. Because even though we have a question about its status, the halacha is he has to return it to the Yisrael. On the other hand, by Sofik Bechor, the Rambam rules that Tokfei Kohen Eimet Simi Yodai, that if the Kohen seizes it, he's allowed to keep it. So how do we reconcile these seemingly contradictory statements in the Rambam? So says the Rashba, a Kohen is entitled to a Bechor at the moment it's born. Whereas, what we're discussing now, the sheep that's used to redeem a Petach Amor, originally belongs to the owner, and then he uses it to redeem the Petach Amor. So therefore, says the Rashba, when we're talking about the Sofik Pidyon Petach Amor, the Cheskas Morakama is clearly that it belongs to the owner. And therefore, even if the kohen seizes it, he has to return it. However, in the case of a Safek Bechor, there, the Yisrael doesn't have a Cheskes Marukama, because perhaps it's a Bechor, and from its birth, it doesn't belong to the Yisrael. And therefore, there the Rambam says that if the kohen seizes it, he could keep it. Says the Gemara, in the previous shir, we spoke about the situation of the Masusa, the situation of the bathhouse, where there was a dispute over the bathhouse, and one of the parties, one of the litigants, went and was magdish that bathhouse, and the Rabbonim, as we learned in that shir, avoided being at the bathhouse. But the question was that hegdish a valid hegdish or not? Says the one, my hava lo de masusa. What is the resolution of that question? Tashma, damar of chiyah bar oven, hava of the bar of chizda. There was such a situation that came to Rav Chizda. Rav Chizda bar of huna, and Rav Chizda brought the shal to Rav huna. Pashta meha damar Rav Nachman. And answered from Rav Nachman said. Rav Nachman said the following statement. Kol mamon shein ata yoch, shein yoch lo tzir be diyanim. Any money that you don't have such a strong claim on that you could win in a court case that it should belong to you, Hegdesha in a Kaddish, then you can't be Magdish. Ask the Gemara, what it seems to be saying is that if your hold on it is stronger that you could win in a Dintaira, then the Halacha would be Hegdesha Kaddish, that the Hegdish would be a valid Hegdish. Ask the Gemara, does that mean that even though I haven't yet quite won the Din Torah, just because I can win the Din Torah, I already could be Magdishit? Ask the Gemara of Amar Rabbi Yochanan, we learned the Masechta Baba Kama, if somebody stole something and there wasn't yet Yiyush, the Loch is Shneim Eni Yochanan Magdishit. Neither the owner nor the Gazlan can be Magdish this item. Zeh, the Gazlan can't be Magdishit, Lufi Shein Shaloi, it's not his. But Zeh, and the owner of the item, although he is the owner of the item, and should he go to Din Torah, he will prevail. Still, since it's Ein B'Reshusoi, it's not in his possession, he can't be Magdishit. So the question is, just because why does Agamar seem to say that just because you could win the Din Torah, that means you can be Magdishit? Answers the Gemara, Mi Savrit, but Mesusa Matatliskinen. Don't say that we're referring to a Mesusa which is just a bath, a barrel, that there, until you actually get possession of it, you can't be Magdashit. We are referring here to Mesusa Makakoyaskinen. We're referring here to a situation where it's a built in pool. The Kiyokhala Tsiba the Yonim, Mesusa Kaima. Since, as we've learned many times, the halacha is that karka ain't an exelus, so a person's level of ownership over karka is a much higher level. So if this person has such a level of ownership that he can win the Din Torah, that is enough that it should be considered that it's his, even though he doesn't have physical possession. Actually, as the Mefarshim point out, this Gemara is really the basis of the question, is also the subject of Machlokes Rishonim. Is this question limited strictly to Hegdish, or will the same din apply regarding selling an item? Why would be the halacha, can one sell an item that he doesn't have actual physical ownership over? Is it considered enough his that he should be allowed to sell it or not? Furthermore, as we discussed when we learned this Gemara in Masechta Baba Kama, there are Rishonim that draw a distinction in this halacha of not being able to be magda something when it's not actually in your possession between kedushas damim and kedushas aguf. We know there are two types of hegdish. There's hegdish which is known as hegdish damim, only for its value, and then there's hegdish kedushas aguf, that the actual item becomes kadosh. And there are rishonim that suggest that this entire discussion is only regarding kedushas damim. The kedushas aguf you can be magdish even when it's not b'rishusai. And the Mefarshim explained that what's the difference. Rabbi Chanan explains what's the difference between kedushas damim and kedushas aguf. So he says a very interesting pshat. He says when somebody is magdish something kedushas damim, he's transferring the item from his rishus into the rishus of hegdish. And the halacha is that in order to be able to transfer something, you have to have it in your possession, and then you could cause a transfer. Whereas, say the says Rabbi Chanan, kedushas and that's what happens by kedushas damim. Whereas by kedushas aguf, says Rabbi Chanan, what actually happens is not that the person is actually magdish, transfers the item out of his rishus into the rishus of hagdish. Rather, what happens is because I magdish the item, the halacha is that I have to treat it on a certain level. The level being that it has to be treated like hagdish. But we're not actually affecting a transfer, and since we're not actually affecting a transfer, it doesn't have to be in my possession in order to be able to create to affect that actual transfer. Continues the Gemara. Tanur after chalifa by Marava kameder bavua. Shnayim adukim betalis. If there are two people holding on to a talis, and as the Rishonim point out, we've actually had a different word that the Gemara has used until now when we speak about two people holding on to an item. The Gemara until now has actually used the word oichsin. Now the Gemara is actually using the word adukim. What's the difference between adukim and oichsim? So the Mefarshim explain the difference between those two words is as follows. By adukim, you're actually holding on to the actual item. By oichsim, and we'll see as we get into the Gemara, how this pshat works in the cases that the Gemara explains. Whereas oichsin, you're not actually holding on completely onto the item that there's a dispute over. So again, says the Gemara, shnayim adukim betalis. If the two litigants holding on to a talis, so the halach is as follows, says the Braisa. Zed noitel ad makam yida megas, v'zed noitel ad makam shiada megas. Each one of us gets to keep the part that we're actually holding. Vashar, the rest of the talus that we're not actually holding on to, that chok and b'shava we divide equally between ourselves. However, continues the Braisa, as this was being said, as Rav Tachlifa was saying this, machvale Ravua pointed upwards as if to say b'shvua, that you also have to make a shvua if you're going besides going through this division. And we have here a very fundamental machlokes rishonim, machlokes Tosfos and Rambam, on what part does a shvua have to be made. Tosfos says that the shvua has to be made on the entire item, both on the part that you're holding and on the rest of the item. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that only the part that you're actually holding, the part that you're actually holding, the part that they actually have physical possession, there is no reason to make a shvua. The shvua is only made on the part that they don't have actual physical possession. There are many different pshatim offered by the Achronim in explaining this machloikis. One pshat that I saw, which actually references to a concept that we've discussed earlier in the week. We spoke earlier in the Masechta about the issue of Gilgul Shvua. That if you can make me, if I'm obligated to make one Shvua, can I be forced to make other Shvuas that maybe otherwise I would not have to make? Which is the concept of Gilgul Shvua. And when we discussed this concept, we discussed the question that is debated in a situation of Gilgul Shvuah? Does that happen automatically, or is Gilgul Shvuah a right? That if I'm obligated to make a shvuah to somebody, so then not only does he do I have to make the shvuah that I'm obligated to make, but he can maybe force me to make other shvuahs also. And perhaps that is the machloikis of the Rambam and Tosfos. Tosfos holds that Gilgul Shvuah says that as soon as I'm obligated to make one shvuah, I make all the shvuahs that I'm, all other shvuahs also must be made. And therefore, since a shvuah must be made, on this there's no argument on the part that we're not holding, the automatic Gilgul Shvuah kicks in, and I also have to make a shvuah on the part that we're each holding. Whereas the Rambam holds, the Gilgul Shvuah doesn't happen automatically. So certainly, on the part of the talis that the two litigants are not holding, we have to make a shvuah. And then, if they'll demand from each other to make a shvuah, they'll indeed have to make such a shvuah. But if they won't make such a demand, they won't have to make a shvuah. Elamas Nisa asked the Gemara, our Mishnah Diktani, the Palgiah Ba'adadi, that they just divide the talis completely. The Loi Tani, our Mishnah doesn't say, Zen Noitel Ad Makam Shodim Agas, Heichem Ishkach Slo. And as the Mefarshim explained, perhaps the din of the Mishnah is the same as the din of the Braisa. What makes us think that the din here is different than the din in the Mishnah is different than the din in the Braisa? So I saw two answers. One answer is, our Mishnah says, we just divide the talus completely. Dividing the talus completely seems to indicate that we're both holding, I'm holding half the talus, and the other individual is holding half the talus. And the Gemara finds it difficult to assume that that was the case, that we're each holding the complete half of a talus. Another pshat is that were our Mishnah to be saying the same thing as the Braisa, so then the Mishnah should have used the same words as the Braisa, at Zed Neutel, at Makam Shiyad Magaz. The fact that our Mishnah doesn't use the same wording is an indication that it's not the same din. Amra Papa, responds to Papa, that our Mishnah is referring to a situation to Tefisa B'Kakashta. They're only holding on to the edges of the talus. And since they're only holding on to the edges of the talus, therefore they're not really holding on to the talus at all. And therefore we divide the talus completely in half. Amra Misharsha. From this din that we just learned in the Braisa, Shmamino, we can learn another din. We know that one of the ways of affecting a kinyan is what's known as kinyan chalipin, or a kinyan suder. Not a barter, but rather what it means is that what happens is that the buyer gives the seller an item, and as soon as the seller grasps that item, we have effective a kinyan. So says the Gemara, Hai Sudra, that if a suder, if a kerchief is used to affect a kinyan suder, keeping the toughest by shalish, as soon as the seller grasps an area of 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim, even though he hasn't held on to the entire suder, karinam bav nosim l'areyu, it's considered that the kinyan has been affected. The command, the pasuk dami v'kani, we look at the area, the space that he holds, as if that space is separate from the rest of the suder, and he can have a kinyan. And as the Mefarshim explained, why? Because just like we saw, when I'm holding on to a talus, the part that I'm holding on to is considered that it's mine, even though I'm not holding on to the whole talus, I'm just holding on to part of the talus, here too, just holding on to part of the suder will affect a kinyan. However, the Ar Sameach makes a very important point. He says that even though our Gemara is saying that holding on to just Sholosh by Sholosh Etzbos is enough, says the Ar Sameach, that's if it could be, even though we didn't physically separate that Sholosh or Sholosh from the rest of the talus, it's referring to a situation where we could separate that Sholosh or Sholosh. But if we couldn't separate that shalosh or shalosh, it's the kind of a garment that without that shalosh or shalosh, the entire garment becomes worthless, then it would not be effective to do a kinyan. Furthermore, the Rishonim wanted to debate based on this Gemara if when we're doing a kinyan suder, can the seller demand that he keep it? It seems from here that this is a proof, some Rishonim say, that the kinyan suder is more of a ceremonial kinyan, because, and he doesn't actually keep the suder, because obviously we're not going to physically separate the shalosh, this area of shalosh, from the rest of the suder. I actually saw a tshuva from the Klaus Magareba, the Shalos Tshuva Stivra Yatziv, that he discusses based on this Gemara that was saying that in order to affect the kinyan, it has to be at least shalosh or shalosh etzbos. How can we do a kinyan, he asks, with a gartel? A gartel is less than gimel or gimel etzbos. So he says, 2 points. Number one, he says that since the gartel is a beged on its own, it's a beged choshev, people wear it for tefillah, so therefore he says it is considered a significant beged, even though it doesn't have the shear of shalosh or shalosh etzbos, and it can be used to affect the kinyan. Another point that he makes is that not every time that we actually do a kinyan suda are we actually affecting a full-fledged transaction, a full-fledged transfer. Sometimes all the kinyan suda is being done for is to create an eschaivis, to create an obligation. To create an eschaivis is much less of a kinyan, and therefore certainly even if it's just a gartel and it's not shalosh or shalosh, it still could be effective. Ask the Gemara, if this is the din, why is this different than what Rav Chisda taught us? Rav Chisda, get biyodoy or meshich biyodoy. If somebody, Rechman Tzlon, is giving a get to his wife, and he has a string, a physical string, attached to the get. So the halach is, im yochel anatkoy levi atzloy, if he could still pull the get back with that string, then it's ain't a mugreshes. Mlaf, otherwise, she is mugreshes. Here we see that unless she has complete control over the get, it's not considered that there was a nesina. Answers the Gemara. Hossam, regarding gittin, krisis binin. The Torah says there has to be a total separation between the husband and wife. Veleka, if he could still pull back the get, then we haven't created a total separation. Hacha, however, here, nesina be'inan. All the Torah requires in order to affect the kinyan is nesina. For ikka, and if the seller grasps an area that's the size of shalosh or shalosh etzbos, we have an adequate nesina. So Taisus discusses the following shaila. Taisus says that if a husband puts a get into the wife's hand, and there's a string, as we've been discussing, attached to the get, but after the husband puts the get into the wife's hand, the wife cups her hand around the get, that the husband wouldn't be able to pull out the get. Says Taisus, that would not be a valid Nesinus get. Why? Because Taisus says, in order to have a valid Nesinus get, there's another din that we learned in Masech the Gittin. The husband has to give the get to the wife. It can't be that the wife is taking the get. As we learned in Gemara Masech the Gittin, if there's a situation of Tali Giteich Me'al Gabri Karka, a husband tells the wife, pick up the get from the floor, it would not be considered a valid Nesinus HaGet. Therefore, says Toysris, that in this case, the wife is creating the Nesinus HaGet by putting her hand around the get, and that's not a valid Nesinus HaGet, and that's why it would not be a good get. There are Rishonim that disagree with Taisus. For they say the fact that the husband instructed the wife to put her hands around the get, that is considered as if the husband did it, and it would be a valid Nesinus HaGet. Taisus goes on to quote the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam that says if a husband gave a get to a wife and it was given in a way that the with a string attached, but the string is a flimsy string, that the get that the string would tear if the husband were to pull the get, that would be considered a valid Nesinus get. That would be considered a valid Nesinus get according to our Gemara. Amarava continues the Gemara. Im Haisa Taf Muzaves, if there are, if it's a gold talus, the loch is cholkin. They divide the talus. Ask the Gemara, pshita. That's what we've been learning all along. That if it's that the husband and wife divide the two litigants, I mean divide. What's Rava teaching us? Answers the Gemara, letzricha the koy zahava bei mitzi, that the gold is in the middle. Ask the Gemara, hanami pshita. We've been learning all along that we divide. What is the Gemara teaching us? Answers the Gemara, loitzricha. It's referring to a situation, the mikrav gabichad. The gold strip is closer to one than to the other. Madutema, damale, and therefore the one that the gold is closer to says, plag hachi, divide the talus in this way that it should be closer to, that I should get the gold. Kamash Malan teaches us Rava, Damalei, that the other litigant could say, my chos is the palgas hachi. Why should we divide the talus in a way that the gold will end up being yours? Plug hachi. Let's divide it in a way that we divide the gold equally, and the Gemara is teaching us that that is an acceptable point, and the talus is divided that way. Tan Rabbanan continues the Braisa. Shnai Medukim Bishtar. If there are two people holding on to a shtar, and again, as will become evident in the Gemara that we're going to learn, the two people that we're discussing here, say the Rishonim, are not just two people walking into Beis Din holding on to a shtar, but rather, it's the Malva and the Loiva of this shtar who are both holding on to the shtar. And what happens here is as follows. Malva Omer, the Malva says Shalihi, that the shtar is still, was my shtar, and the shtar wasn't paid for nothing many, and I lost the shtar, and now umetzosiv, now I found it. For Loiva Omer, Loiva says shalchahu, indeed there was here a shtar, however I paid it to you uprati lecha, and you returned the shtar to me, and you returned the shtar to me because I paid it to you. Says Rebbe, yiskayim ashtar b'chesamav, we do kiyim, and as soon as kiyim is accomplished, then the halacha is the malva could collect the shtar. And the Gemara will analyze the opinion of Rebbe in a moment. Shimon Gamliel Aymer, yachloiku, we divide. It's interesting to note that the Mefarshim point out that this brisa, we see a very interesting thing. We know that Rebbe was the son of Rav Shimon Gamliel, and yet we find that in this brisa, Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel are arguing. From here we see that when it comes to Divrei Torah, a son is allowed to disagree with his father. The question that they, however, ask is, fine, a son can argue with his father, but shouldn't the Braisa first quote the opinion of the father, or of Shimon Gamliel, before it quotes the opinion of Rebbe? So I saw a teretz that since the halacha follows the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Braisa mentions his opinion second. Says the Braisa, another din, nafla yadayin, if the shtar fell into the hands of a dayan, the halacha is layoytzi alomis. Then it remains by the dayan. The shtar can be used. And again, this machlok will also be explained in the Gemara. So begins the Gemara. Amamar yiskayim hashtar b'chesamav. If the shtar was found, the loiv and the malva are both holding on to the shtar, the halacha is we should be mekayim the shtar. And it seems that according to Rebbe, the Govalei Malva Kulei, and once we'll accomplish Kim Ashtar, then the Malva could collect with the Shtar. Ask the Gemara, Velesle Masnisen Shnaim Oichsen, does Rebbe dispute with what we learned in our Mishnah, that the Mishnah says Shnaim Oichsen Metalis, that the Aloch is Yachloiku? And as the Mefarshim explained, even though we have learned, we spoke about it in our first year, that not always is the Halocha Yachloiku, here, it would make most sense to follow that psak. Why? Number one, Tosfos taught us at the beginning of the Masechta that wherever Yachloiku is possible, that that's what happened, and here it's also possible, maybe the loiva paid half the debt, not the entire debt, we do Yachloiku. And therefore here, it should be Yachloiku. Another pshat that I saw in the Rishonim, that even if Rebbe will dispute the psak of Yachloiku, then he should have said, But that's not what Rebbe says. What Rebbe says is, we leave it, but we allow the malva to completely collect with the shtar. Why? A third pshat that I saw in explaining the Gemara's question is the pshat of the Pnei Yeshua. The Pnei Yeshua says that the Gemara's psak, Rebbe's psak, that the malva should be able to collect it, seems difficult to understand. Because usually we try to make a psak which is equitable to both parties. Here, the malva is the complete winner, and the loiver is the complete loser. And that's typically not the way Bezdin paskins. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rav, Amar Rav Nachman, we need to reinterpret Rebbe's opinion. The Mekuyim, if the shtar is a shtar Mekuyim, then the Riyakul, everybody will agree that Yachloiku, we divide between the malva and the loiver. Keep Ligi, the Machloikus here is B'she'en Mekuyim, when the shtar is not a shtar Mekuyim. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Rebbe Sava, even if the loiver agreed that he had borrowed the money, skiyim is still required. Therefore, if the shtar is mekuyim, then polig will divide it between the malva and the loiver. But if we don't have a shtar mekuyim, then loy polig, they don't divide it at all, and the loiver wouldn't have to pay anything. My tama, why? Now, why are we being so nice to the loiva? Explains the Gemara. A shtar without kiyim chas b'balmahu is a piece of paper that's worthless. Man kamash v'le lahay shtara loiva. Who turns the shtar into a valid shtar? The loiva, by saying that it was a valid shtar. But he at the same time is also saying hakamar, he's claiming the priya that he paid up his obligation, and therefore the shtar cannot be used against him. However, Rav Shimon Gamliel Sover, might v'shtar shekosva in tzarch l'kayma. As soon as he agrees that the shtar was written, then the kiyum is not necessary. And therefore, avgav d'loy mekaymle, so even if they weren't mekaym the shtar, the aloch is yachloiku. And as the Rush explains the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, he says as follows, actually a shtar is always considered, if we have a shtar in front of us, even if the shtar is not mekuyim, the halacha considers the shtar a valid shtar. And even if somebody claims that's mezuyif, that it's a forgery, halacha doesn't really take that claim seriously. It's just Chazal said that we should, as we learned the Gemara Masechta Ksubos, go through the kiyum process. But not to say that it's really a very valid claim. And since it's not really a very valid claim, the halacha is that if the loiva says that the shtar is a valid shtar, and he isn't claiming that it's a forgery, we don't make that claim on his behalf, and even if the shtar is not mekuyim, it's returned to the malva. The braisa continued to say, Nafali adayin, if the dayin found it, lo yotze lomis. And we asked, we indicated, Mashno Yadayin. Why should it make a difference if the Dayan found it or somebody else found it? Amarov explains the Gemara as follows. Hachkama. V'ach shemotz shtar shnofel Yadayin. If somebody found a shtar that was already by the Dayan. What does that mean? V'hechi domi. The cost by hempik. That not only was the shtar mekuyim, but a hempik, which is a certification indicating that the shtar mekuyim was inserted into the shtar, such a shtar layotzi alamis, that the shtar is left by the person who finds it. It's yimunach at shiav al yol, and continues the Gemara. V'loy mibayi loy kasubay kumpik. Certainly, in a situation where the shtar doesn't have a hempik, derke lameimer, where there one could certainly assume or think that cost the lovers for loy loiva, that the shtar was maybe written with the intention that somebody's going to borrow money, but it was actually never used. That the halach is that yemunach at shiav al yol. Allah feel it cost by hempik the mekuyim. But even if there was a hempik, which clearly indicates that the shtar was used, still teaches us this tana to lo yachser, that the shtar should not be returned. The chashin l'proin. We have to be concerned that the loiva already paid the malva and the shtar is not a valid shtar. Rav Yossi disagreed. He said, "Arei b'chuskosai," that we give it back to the malva. Obviously, because Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion, v'loich hashil l'peron, we're not concerned that the shtar was already paid. Ask the Gemara, v'loich hash Rabbi Yossi l'peron, is this indeed Rabbi Yossi's opinion, that he's not concerned that it was already paid off? But Tanya, matz shtar ksuba b'shuk, if somebody finds a shtar ksuba in the street, b'zman shabal moida, if the husband agrees that he hasn't yet paid the ksuba, is the halacha yachzlisha, we should return the ksuba to the wife. Ain't a bal moida, but if the husband is not agreeable and he claims that he already paid off the ksuba and should not be returned to his wife, the halacha is lo yachzal loy lezev loy lezev. It should not be returned neither to the husband nor to the wife. Rabbi Yossi says the following: oida tachas bala, if they're still married and the ksuba was found in the street, yachsalisha, we should return the ksuba to the wife. Nis'amo and nis'garisha. However, if the marriage was terminated and there is a real possibility that the ksuba was already paid, there Rabbi Yossi will agree that lo yachsal lo lezev lo lezev. But what do we see? That Rabbi Yossi is concerned that if the marriage is terminated, that the ksuba was paid. Why here is he not? Why by the shtar that's found in the street is he not concerned for peron? Answers the Gemara, Epoch. We have to reverse the opinions of Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon in the first Braisa and say as follows: Nafli Yadayin Layotz Lomis, if the shtar was Mekuyim Yemunach Atshiyov El Yohu Divrei Rabbi Yossi V'chom Ramim Harei B'chus Kosoi, we could use the shtar and give it back to the Malva, and he could collect with it. Ask the Gemara, what have we accomplished by reversing the opinions of the first Braisa? Yehochi Tashid Rabbanan Rabbanan. We'll have a steer between the Rabbanan. Because, according to the first Braisa, the Rabbanan is saying that a shtar that we assume is still a good shtar when it's found in the street, and that's why we return it to the Malva, we're not concerned for Peron. And in this Braisa, the Rabbanan are telling us that if the marriage was terminated, we're concerned that it was paid already. Answers the Gemara, Shtar Ksuba, we have to reinterpret the second Braisa and explain the Braisa in the following manner. The second Braisa doesn't represent, says the Gemara at this point, a machloikis of Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan. Rather, the second Braisa, Kula Rabbi Yossi, completely represents the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. V'chsuri mechzavachak tani. Ein abal moida, if the husband doesn't agree that he still owes the wife the ksuba, taloch is lo yachs lo lezev lo lezev, we don't give the ksuba to either of them. However, says Rabbi Yossi, v'medvon amurim, when is the husband's claim taken seriously? In a situation, shenis armel and his garsha, where the marriage has been terminated, avel oida tach spala, if they're still married, der aloch is yachs leisha, we give it back to the wife. Shab Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi teaches us, oida tach spala, if this couple is still married, and the ksuba is found in the street, the din is yachs leisha. We give the ksuba back to the wife, only if this amel and this gash with the marriage, because we're not concerned that the ksuba was paid, only in a situation of this amel and this gash where the marriage was terminated, there we have to be concerned that maybe the ksuba was paid, and therefore the halach is lo yachs lo yizev lo yizev, we leave it at shirev eliyol. Rapapa ma loylam loy tepach. Rapapa doesn't like this interpretation, because Rapapa, as the sheet explains, is not satisfied with a pshat that calls for so much to be added into the Braisa. And therefore, says Rapapa, Rabbi Yossi, the way to understand the Braisa is as follows. Rabbi Yossi l'divreim l'divrabonim kamalei. Rabbi Yossi is addressing the Rabbanim. L'didi, my opinion is, I feel in his amal and his garsha, that even if the marriage was terminated, and the shtar ksuba is found in the street, we return it to the wife. Because I feel in this amun is garsha, even in a situation where the marriage is terminated, nami lo chashin leperon, I'm not concerned that the husband paid off, and we give back the ksuba to the wife. L'datchu, you who are concerned for peron, consistent with your opinion, Says Rabbi Yossi to them, Oidele Mias, should you at least not agree with me that Ba'oide B'tachas Bala, that if they're still married, there you should agree the Yachsel Isha, the Labas Peroini. There is no reason to assume that the husband paid off the Ksuba. They're still Baruch Shem happily married. Family Rabbonon, and the Rabbonon say to Rabbi Yossi, that even in a situation that they're still married, if the Ksuba is found in the street, we won't give it back to the wife, for we are concerned, maybe he gave her money for the Ksuba while they're married, and that's why she's no longer entitled to payment. And as the Rishonim explain, what is the Machloikus of Rabbi Yossi Rabbonim? We know, we learned, the Gemara Masechta Ksubas, that says a husband may not remain with his wife without a Ksuba. The question here is, what happens if somebody loses the Ksuba? What would normally happen? Rabbi Yossi says, what would normally happen is, they would write another Ksuba in Beis Din. Most people aren't competent to write a Ksuba on their own. They would write another Ksuba in Beis Din, and everybody would know that that's what happened here, because something that happens in Beis Din, the news travels. The Rabbanan say, a person loses his ksuba, it's the middle of the night, he's left without a ksuba, what does he do? He doesn't run to Beis Din to write another ksuba, he's tzror atvasah, he gives her money to pay off the ksuba, and that is something that people are not necessarily going to be aware of, and therefore we have to be choshish according to Rabbanan leperon. Ravina says, Loilam apach kamesa. We should reverse the opinions of the Rabbanon and Rabbi Yossi in the first Braisa. So if we're reversing the opinion, then we had a question over here. The Rabbanon, if we're now reversing the opinion, hold that we're not choshesh l'peron, then we give it back to the Malva. Why over here are we choshesh l'peron? Because chashina l'shtei ksubas. The Rabbanon concerned that maybe the husband wrote the wife two ksubas. And again, because maybe the first ksuba got lost, and therefore, to avoid any problem, they don't give the ksuba should be munachat she'avah aliyahu. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. He says l'shtei ksubas, that a husband wrote to his wife two ksubas l'chayish. That's very unlikely. Every shtar has in it a toifis and a toif. The tarif are the unique factors in this specific shtar. The tarifis is the boilerplate form of the shtar. Amar Rabbi Loza, Machloikis. When we said in the previous Gemara that Rav Shimon Gamliel says that this shtar should be divided, is referring to a situation, says Rabbi Loza, b'shnei madukim b'tarifis, if both litigants, the Malva and the Loiva, are actually holding on to the Taifas together, or Shnei Matayrif, both are holding on to the Taifas. However, says the Gemara, Aval Echad Aduk B'Taifas, and one of them is holding on to the Taifas. Ve'echad Aduk B'Taifas, and one is holding on to the Taifas. Zed Naitel Taifas, consistent with what we've been learning throughout the Shir, everybody keeps what is in his physical possession, so the one that holds on to the Taifas receives the typhus, the Z Nital Tyrif, and this one holds on to the Tyrif. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says, Loilam Chalkim. Ask the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan, that says that even if one is holding the Tyrif and one is holding the typhus, we just divide the shtar 50-50. Afilo Echad Ochad Betafis, Vechad Adik Betairif. But Tanya, didn't we learn earlier in our shiur today, the Zed Noitel Ad Makom Shad Magaz, what you're actually physically holding becomes yours? Says the Gemara, Leitzricha, Rabbi Yochanan Halacha applies in a situation, the Kai Tar Bemitzi, that the Tarif is in the middle, in the area that neither the Malva or the Loiva are holding onto, and that's where Rabbi Yochanan says they divide it. However, Rabbi Yochanan will agree that what they're actually holding, whether the Malva, the Loiva, what they're actually holding, they keep. Ask the Gemara, Yehocha Maila Memra, if the neither is holding that item, so obviously what neither is holding, we divide. What's Rabbi Yochanan teaching us that we haven't previously learned?
Answers the Gemara, as we learned earlier. The Torah is closer to the area to one of these two people, the Malva or the Loiva, are actually holding. That the one that has the Torah closer to him says, let's divide it in a way that I should get the Torah. Kamash Malan teaches us, Rabbi Yochanan, Domele, that the other party says to him, my chos is the palgas hachi, why should we divide it in a way that you should get the Torah? Plaik hachi, let's divide it in a way that the Torah too is divided equally between us. Omele Rav Achim Adiftala Ravina, Lirabaloza, Dome, Zen not the Typhus, Zen not the Torah. That each one gets what they're actually holding. Lomeli, what's the purpose of doing this? We're not, the document doesn't represent, its value is not the piece of paper, that you get this part of the paper, and I get that part of that paper. Because the chilotzra pitzlucha soyitzarach is the purpose of the document to be used as a battle cap, that we should know which part is mine and which part is yours. Amalei l'demei. No, it has value. The Torah and the Typhus had different values. Damahachi. Because the Torah, is the area of the shtar that has the date. And a shtar with a date, as we're about to learn, has a lot of more value than a shtar without a date. Because the shtar with a date allows one to collect from the kuchas. Shtar de ispeis man. A shtar that has a date, the Torah that has the date, kamishava, is worth more. Or the less bazan, but it's the part that doesn't have the date, the typhus, kamishava, is worth less. So, why? As we explained. Because shtar de ispeis man, a shtar with a date, govim mishabdi, you could collect from the lakuchis, v'idach, but without a date, loy govim mishabdi. And therefore, yavle heich de beni beni. So let's say the shtar is a shtar for $100. However, a shtar without a date is only worth $80. So what we would do here is, the person, we won't divide it 50-50, where each one of us gets, the Malva and the Loiva gets $50 each. Rather, we'll only divide it as 40-40. V'yachloiku nami damarin. And if, says the Gemara, that when Rav Shimon Gamliel, or as we've been learning, other Tanoim, Amoraim, say that items are divided, it always means l'demei. We don't actually divide the item, we divide the value of the item. And says the Gemara, I'll prove to you that that's what Yechloiku means throughout this parak. Dilei teima hachi, shnaim oichs metalis, hachi nami de pligi, is the halacha that we should divide the talis in two? Ha'afsada, by dividing the talis in two, we decrease its value. Says the Gemara, halai kasha. That isn't necessarily a proof. The chazlik tarim, we maybe start off with a very big talis, and by dividing it into two, it can still be used for children. Ask the Gemara, v'hada merava, imhoisim metavis muhuzaves, if it was a gold talis, cholkim. Hochinami, the pligile, doesn't mean that we divide it, physically divide it, ha'af sedua. And as Tysus explains, on a regular talis, we could understand the Gemara suggesting that we divide the talis into two, and that the children could each, that, and each half is given to a different child. But a gold talis is not used for children. So certainly isn't this a proof that when we divide, it doesn't mean we actually physically divide it. We sell it and we share the money. As the Gemara, Halei Kasha, the Chazal B'nei Melachim. It's a gold talis that can be used for young princes and we divide it in two, physically. As the Gemara, Vada Tanan, Hay Shnayim Rechmal Agav Behema, we learned in our Mishnah, if two people are riding on an animal, that, and there's a dispute who the owner is, and the Mishnah says, Yechloiku, Hach Nam de Plegalei, does the Mishnah mean that we should actually physically divide the animal? Hav Sadua, but by dividing the animal, will decrease its value. Says the Gemara, Bishlam Latayra, if we were talking about a kosher animal, Chazi Labasar, so we could shech the animal, and divide the meat, each one of us taking half the meat. El Tameya, which can't be used for eating, it can only be used for work. If we're going to divide it physically in half, Hav Sadua, we're going to actually lose any value of it. El Demei. What it must be, it means that when we say Yachloiku, it doesn't mean that we fit throughout the Perek. It doesn't mean that we physically divide it. We just divide the value. Hakanami le Demei. And here we have a Machloikis HaPaiskim, how to understand the Maskon of the Gemara. Some Paiskim understand the Maskon of the Gemara to be saying that in all situations, since this case by the animal clearly proves it that way, that whenever it says Yachloiku, Yachloiku means to physically, not to physically divide, but to divide it, its value. That's how the Drisha learns the Maskon of the Gemara. However, others, the Trumas Adeshin, learn the Maskon of the Gemara differently. They continue saying that where a physical division is possible, we should physically divide it. Where physical division is not possible, then we do Ledmei. Now, what is, sometimes you can do a physical division, but the physical division will cause you a loss. How much of a loss should be absorbed and still do a physical division if that's what one of the parties want? And how much of a loss is considered so significant that it's not considered that we should do a physical division? So the Truman situation says up to 20%. If the difference is even up to 20% and one of the parties insists on a physical division, then we should do a physical division. If it's more than 20%, then the other party cannot demand a physical division, and with the may, we just sell it and share the money.